November 1st after the storm at Zeta. I was so amazed, and it was a great shout out to the town crews and to you and everybody. Everybody was all ready for it. We had some problems. We got through it.
That's right. You might say we got zapped by Zeta. It was really a sudden event, wasn't it? So our town crews were on standby and got out as soon as they could to address the outages and the conditions that we were facing. Also want to thank our folks that are at Town Hall that were taking in all the reports of outages. We even had some of our staff staying late into the afternoon to make sure that everything was covered and all the reports were being taken.
And we thank you for the phone call with the downed tree on the Dillard Road and also the information to call Town Hall, and everybody was going to compile a list and everybody would go out and not to call 911.
If it's during a business day, which this was the case, you call 526-2118. Our Town Hall staff will answer. And what they were doing, they had about a 5-page list of reported outages. And then they're in radio contact with the electric crews to make sure that everybody's problem is addressed during the day. The problem with this storm was that it wasn't just one big single outage, but just small power outages throughout the neighborhoods and the business districts of the town. I know our town manager was riding around with our public works director, Lamar Nix, and there were just tree limbs that it hit multiple power lines everywhere, and it affected some small clusters of residents, and then others were not affected. It was just a real challenge all day for our limited number of crews with our electrical department to address all of the outages that were occurring at the same time. I appreciate all the work they did. I know sometimes people will report an outage in a situation like this where in the morning we had 45 mile an hour wind and blowing rain, and they can't work in that kind of a situation. They have to wait until the conditions become safe to where they can actually get out and start putting the lines back up. And we also had a couple of telephone poles that were snapped in two. And when the power poles get snapped in two, it's not a matter of reattaching the lines. We have to actually put a new pole in, and that takes some time.
The amount of rain that we got, 2 inches the day before Zeta moved through, and then over 5 inches, 7 inches of rain. What steps you took to protect yourself? That's going to cause some flooding.
In our floodplain areas, for example, over near Trillium, near Horse Cove, water was running over the street. Over on Leonard Road, that little creek there, it was running over the street. And in other places, we had water actually breaching the pipes and going over the streets. And it was just a function of getting 7 inches of rain in just a few hours. It has no place to go. And we do have those floodplain areas. I was out early morning. I was looking at the water running over Horse Cove Road at Trillium. It would not be safe to do that. So I turned, I started to go down Leonard Road because I wanted to survey what was happening. There was water running over that culvert too, but I could still see the center line and everything on the road. At that time, Lamar Nix pulled up. He was also out, you know, addressing the situation. I said, Lamar, I think I can just kind of cruise on over with my Toyota truck over that culvert because I can see the line. It's just a little bit of water. And he said, Mayor, that would not be safe. You don't know how much dirt and rock has been washed out underneath that road. It might look good to you, but once you put pressure on it, your truck could be collapsed into a serious situation. So I took his advice and turned around and did not go over any area where there was water running over the road. But that just goes to show you in situations. We all know that we're not supposed to do that. You know, the officials always tell you, do not drive over a road where water's running over. It could be dangerous. But then when you get on the highway, you say, well, maybe I can do it. And that's when accidents occur.
Yeah, we're going to be cleaning up for a while too, aren't we?
Yes, we are. On Thursday afternoon when it cleared, and I was amazed at the debris that was on the side of the road. Some of it was because our road crews had to come out with chainsaws and they pushed it aside. We had a major tree fall on 106 near Dusty's, and it took a lot of time to remove that. They pushed those trees over to the side, and it will take several weeks probably for them to come along with the chipper and everything and remove all of that. One of the ones that was a real problem for us was on 64. between here and the radio station, there are a couple of places where there's some severe washout. We've already informed DOT that needs to be addressed, and they'll be coming out and doing some filling very carefully in the next day or so. And luckily, the rain stopped, and we didn't get more than 7 inches, because I fear we could have had a major washout on 64.
And a report of a mudslide right there at Jackson County line and the Macon County line, but that was cleared up pretty quickly there.
Right. And on the morning of the storm, as it was clearing out about 10 o'clock, I had a resident who lives on Lake Sequoia come by and say, the lake's going out of its bank and it's, you know, coming up to our house. I was very concerned, and that person, of course, was concerned. They were asking if we could open the valve on the dam. And unfortunately, there was two reasons why we couldn't. Even if you open up that valve and release water, it's not enough water to really make a difference with the amount of water that was coming into the lake. And then second of all, we couldn't send one of our work crews out in a boat in that swift water right at the dam to have to go down and reach down and actually get the lever that would open the valve up anyway. You know, I know they were concerned. I was concerned. Some of the decks on Lake Sequoia that you normally see, the water was covering them. There was just so much water. But I went over to the person's house and actually looked at their situation. And thank goodness we didn't get any more rain, and the level of the lake went down pretty quick.
Well, that's what happened. And now what's going to happen this week is pretty exciting about bids and broadband.
That's right. At the first of last week, the bids for the operation of our fiber optic network for broadband were submitted on Monday. Those bids have been opened, and it's now time for the town board to review those bids. I've requested that the town board have a special meeting sometimes at the beginning of next week. I can't tell you exactly what time now because of scheduling issues, but we will be having a meeting. If you're on our Sunshine list, you'll get notification of the meeting, and we'll have a public notice at Town Hall. And also, if you're on the Sunshine list, you'll actually get copies of the bid proposals. And we had three companies that submitted bids. Originally, when we first had the first round of bid requests, we had five companies. All the submissions had incomplete information, so we took another 30 days and re-requested the submission of the bids with more detailed information, and three companies submitted bids. The companies are North Carolina Broadband, Balsam West, and Hotwire. We will be looking at those bids, and the board will make a decision on how we move forward in selecting a company to operate the network.
Now, what's going to happen at November 16th? Is the end of the world coming for these people that didn't get their bear toters? And it's time. It's time.
It is time. That will have been about 15 months since the ordinance was passed. I know that there's some issues about back order of toters. On the other hand, a lot of people were proactive and have ordered their toters months ago, and they're in operation at this time. On November the 16th, we will stop picking up trash that has been placed in the old 35-gallon open trash containers that are not bear-resistant. We will require that the trash be in a bear-resistant toter that our folks can unload using the lift on their truck. I know that Reeves is having trouble getting the small 32-gallon toters. The 64-gallon toters are available, and maybe some folks might have to use a larger toter. I have a 64-gallon toter, and I think it serves me well if we have a lot of trash at any one period of time. You can get them there. I went down this past week to Home Depot in Clayton. They had a lot of 95-gallon bear-resistant toters, which some people might want to use. They had one 64-gallon toter left, but they said they had more on order, and sometimes this coming week, they should have more in. Some people are concerned about wheeling the toter back and forth from their house down to the street. On the other hand, over by Mirror Lake, I've seen some people have been very creative building a little containment thing where the trash folks can just come and open the gate and wheel it out and then put it right back in that container. Another question somebody said was, are you going to fine us if we have the trash in a bear-resistant toter and the bear gets into the toter? My response is no. If a bear is strong enough to breach your toter, you've acted in good faith. We won't have a problem with that. We'll understand that sometimes the nature is stronger than human will. Starting November the 16th, if you continue to put trash in a container that is not bear resistant, then we will not pick it up. You need to be taking it to the trash centers at Rich Gap or at Buck Creek, or find you a way to get you a bear-resistant toter.
We have a shout-out coming out. We've got to for the Highlands Pack, and I have not seen the video that you recorded about the Highlands Pack and their expansion revamping, but I love the picture on the front page of the Highlander and the newspapers.
They've had to kind of rethink their design, and I'm delighted that they've been able to come up with a creative solution to address something that is prevalent throughout Highlands right now, and that is the high cost of construction. We're all mindful that it costs a lot of money to build a facility here, and I want to give a shout out to the PAC for their diligence and persistence in coming up with a way to get a beautiful performing arts center built, and I look forward to seeing the final completion of that new facility, and it will really serve the arts here in Highlands well into the future.
Boy, early voting set records in Macon and Jackson County. Of course, that's over. It ended on Saturday at 3 p.m. on October 31st. Well, we got one more shot at it, and Election Day on Tuesday.
That's right, and I hope everyone who is registered in this precinct will go out and vote on Election Day. I think I wrote in the newspaper in my column about the idea, the hope that we could have almost 100% voting this year. Mm-hmm. I doubt that we'll get to 100%, but we certainly should have a strong turnout of folks coming to cast their ballot. We have, of course, the presidential race that everybody's focused on, but we have a lot of important state races, and we have the local county races where we'll be electing things like county commissioners and school board representatives. I think it's very important that everyone's voice be heard on all of these elections, not just at the national level.
And we have to be vigilant about COVID-19. It's getting worse and worse across the country, and we have to just keep our guard up.
That's a good way of describing it, Steve. I don't think we can relax and let our guard down. Looking back on the way we have addressed this over the past few months, I was going to town halls today and saying, how could we have done some things better, differently? Did I overreact when it first broke out about trying to keep people from coming up here in droves? All of these things, you know, I think about, as Brian Steeler, one of our commissioners, noted at the time at a meeting, during a state of an emergency, you have about 10% of the information that you need now and into the future, but you have to make a decision. And that's the way I've kind of looked at some of those decisions that we made. But to me, it's a real simple process now that we all must participate by, if you can, stay at home. If you're concerned that you're vulnerable to the COVID, stay at home as much as you can. Wash your hands frequently. Socially distance, that is, wait and allow people their space if you're at the grocery store or wherever, but socially distance. And then simply wear a mask when you're in the businesses in downtown Highlands and when you are on the commercial sidewalks of downtown Highlands and in the shopping areas. If you'll wear a mask, that is so important. And I stress this, we are not requiring you to wear a mask if you're in a neighborhood on a street with your family or even with friends. We recommend you socially distancing, but we're not going to require that. If you are walking on a sidewalk in a neighborhood, you do not have to wear a mask. Now, I see some people doing that, and that's great if that's what they want to do, but that's not a requirement. I run every afternoon throughout the neighborhoods. We try to socially distance in our running. We enjoy being out and exercising, and I encourage people to do the same, and many people are doing that. But I just think it gets down to simple responsibility and concern for other people, and that is socially distance, wash your hands frequently, and wear the mask.
We've had comments saying, you know, the reason why we came here is because we've heard you've been so smart about this.
We were talking before the recording of this. This past week in Waynesville, the city council was considering having a mask mandate for their town. I think that was a little bit late, and they got a lot of blowback from people saying, you can't tell me to wear a mask. I hear that and know that some people embrace that. But then my daughter is a nurse, and I look at all of those heroic first responder, medical people, nurses and doctors who are constantly exposed to COVID. And I want to say, just out of concern for these heroes that we expect to do their job, the least we can do is to socially distance, wash our hands, and wear a mask when we're out in public. It's not just for ourselves, but it benefits ourselves, but it also helps protect those people that put their life on the line every day in treating people when they become ill with COVID.